on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to InvestTalk. I appreciate you being with here. It is Wednesday, April 29th. We're here to answer your questions, but sometimes I like to ask them, too. I do. It may be a question that doesn't occur to you, or at least isn't right now. Here it is. Does your retirement portfolio have enough growth stocks? You can't all be, conservative. You got to have some element of growth, in there. Charles Seymour, who writes for InvestorPete.com, quotes the old axiom, the 100 minus your age is how much you should have in bonds. We talked about that yesterday. It said maybe it should be 110 or 120 minus your age because people are living so much longer. Maybe you shouldn't be too conservative. Now, this is the whole problem. As you get older, you don't have all the time to make up for losses. You don't. But you also have to grow your portfolio, and you want to live on the dividends that are thrown off. You're in a quandary. What do you do? You can't just ignore the market, and you can't ignore the risks in the market, and everybody has different risk tolerance. It's a difficult problem as to what you should do. It's a difficult problem. I talked to a nice lady today about, then if you're in a pretty aggressive account and you're making a lot of trades, and you're going to incur a lot of taxes, maybe short term, and now you've got a tax issue. There's a lot of things to think about these days, and always has been, but becoming more and more important because people cannot get returns on CDs or savings accounts. You get nothing. You get much less than inflation. Inflation is hardly anything at all. You get nothing. So it's a difficult, difficult decision for people like me and older. I'm 62. It's just difficult as you get older. Then you get these young guys, money managers, they're in their 30s, and they say, well, just buy the market and just hold on and buy when it goes down. It'll eventually come back. Well, that might be when you're dead. Look up, as I pointed out the other day, it took 14 plus years to get from the NASDAQ high to get to a new high. There were people buying at the NASDAQ high in 2000. There are buyers. Well, if they held on to all that, they now got even. How many older people will die in that period of time? So there's a balancing act. It's always, always difficult. And, of course, you got to think about risk tolerance. And, we do have a tool to try to judge your risk tolerance. It asks a few questions. It takes a few minutes to fill out. It's free. You just access it on investtalk.com, a risk analysis tool. And you just ask a few questions. And it rates you from like 1 to 99. And just so you know, 80 is what the S&P 500 risk is. So if you want to be less risky than that, you got to have a less score than that. But if you really want to know what your portfolio is, you got to send it to me and I'll put it in on the other side. We can compare your risk tolerance that you already answered these questions with what your portfolio is actually doing. It's kind of interesting. Okay, let's turn to the questions that you want to ask instead of what I want to ask. You can call us anytime you want. The 24-hour listen line is always open. It's live. And, of course, we're on air right now, Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. 888-99-CHARGE, how to reach me right now.
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm calling from Brentwood. I have a question about 529 plan. I want to open up one for my son, and I was wondering which state-sponsored plan you would recommend. I'm looking for low-cost ETFs or index funds, and I was just curious as to which one you thought would fit that profile. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Now, I did this about a year and a half ago. I looked at the various states, 529, and for everybody else, our 529 program is an educational savings account. You put money in it, and I think you can put in $15,000, $16,000 a year, and that money is earmarked for education, college, accredited colleges only. It's the only thing you can spend it on. And you get to grow that money tax-free, no capital gains tax or anything else. You got to pay money in after-tax dollars into it, but the growth is tax-free. Well, then you take it out to pay for college. And when I did take a look at them, I noticed Illinois and Florida seem to me to have the most flexibility in what you can buy and how long you can stay and what funds. Some of the 529 programs make you get more conservative as your child gets closer and closer to college. I don't care for those because it depends on what the market's doing. They're just making a dumb guess. They don't know. So I don't like that. But those are the two states I kind of liked. But that was a year and a half ago. Maybe things have changed. So you're going to have to check that out for yourself, I think. Berkshire Hathaway's 50th anniversary shareholder letter included some important lessons for all investors. He has five rules Warren Buffett wants you to follow. Very good rules. Some of them might be tough to follow, but they're good. And that's going to be our main talking point today. Also, the GDP number came out for the first quarter today. I'd like to talk about three reasons why it was so bad. It was only up 0.2%, first quarter GDP. And even after the experts downgraded over the quarter down from 2.5%, 3% down to 1%, they thought it would grow, and it came in at growth of 0.2%. Pretty bad. Not very good. So we're going to talk about that. What caused the, and why didn't the market sell off? Because it really didn't. I mean, it was weak today, but it didn't really sell off. And why is oil rallying? Weak economy, GDP number said, why would oil prices go up? Well, we'll talk about that too. And home buying this spring is on a fairly strong note. I have some evidence to show back that up, and that's what I'm going to share with you as well. The market today was down. The Dow down 76, the Nasdaq down 32, and the S&P down 8. And it is struggling. You've had a market that's really right near its top, and it's just having a heck of a time trying to break through that top. Just break through. It's going to be just difficult for the market. There's earnings are coming in better than expected, corporate earnings, but those earnings are less than they were a year ago quarter. Earnings are down from a year ago quarter for most corporations. They beat expectations, so what you see in the news is, this is really beat expectations. Take a closer look. How good are they really? So, that's what we're dealing with. The market was down today. It was it down yesterday too? But you notice that the last 2 days it fell sharply, but then worked its way back up. So less fall than it was intraday, which I think is interesting. I don't know if that's telling us a story or not, but it's telling you that the market's resilient. It's probably what it's telling you. Does it make sense to take your Social Security at age 62? That question came up yesterday. Do you have questions about spousal benefits in Social Security? You know what those are? So what is your question on this Wednesday afternoon? I'll try to answer any of them. 888-99-CHARGE, how you can connect with me, and you can do it right now here on Invest Talk. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to JJ in Santa Clara. How are you doing, JJ?
Hey, Steve. Good afternoon.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the show. I wanted to just get your opinion on Micron Technology, the symbol MU.
Okay.
And then I wanted to find out, is that a bullish? Is selling a put, is that bullish? Or how does that compare to just buying the stock?
Okay, well, when you're talking about selling the put or buying a put, or those are options. Okay, you're talking about options. And buying a stock, you're actually buying the stock. And put options are where you can, they could put the stock to you. That's the simplest way I can do it. At a certain price, okay, they can put it to you. Pardon me?
For example, I sold a put option for 29 on MU. Mm-hmm. For the price of 60, and so if they put it on me, it's just like as if I bought the stock at 29.
Yes.
So if I was going to buy the stock at 29, isn't it better just to sell a put for it?
Well, I'm not a big options guy, and when you're talking about what's a good strategy for options, there is lots of strategies, and is that a good idea? Well, yeah, almost 85% of options expire worthless. They expire every third Friday of the month. So doing options is a good way to protect your portfolio if you want to put your stock to somebody else at a certain price. So if it starts to fall, you get to put it, you don't get to lose too much money because you get to put it to them. And there's a good way to earn income by selling options and having an option strategy. It produces income because it costs, you know, there's a premium. So JJ, it's a very complex question. Okay, but let's talk about, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Can you talk about MU?
Sure.
The Micron?
Yes, let's talk about Micron Technology. Manufactures RAM and flash memory. It's a big company, $31 billion company. This is not small. Okay, the reason why they're having trouble, they were at high in December at 36, and it's a pretty volatile stock last year and this year, and now it's at 28.87 today. Well, why did it fall off? When it's making earnings are going up, but sales have been falling. Okay, they still grew this last quarter 1%. The quarter before that was up 13%. The quarter before that up 49%. The quarter before that up 72%. So it's gone from 6 quarters ago, 120% growth, to 98% growth, to 72% growth, 49% growth, 13%. So people see that, investors see that and say, hey, why is it going down? Why is the growth rates going down? Well, it is, but the stock is pretty cheap. I mean, it's only selling, it's a $28 stock, $29 stock, it's going to make $3.77 next year. What is that, 8 PE? That's pretty low.
That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, that's pretty low. And return on equity is very high, cash flow is very good, not too much debt, and mutual funds are buyers, they're not sellers. So, I think it's a pretty good price, you know, where it is.
Do you mind comparing it to NVIDIA?
NVIDIA. What's the symbol on NVIDIA?
I think NVIA, NVDA, NVDA.
Okay, NVIDIA is designs graphic processing units and personal computers, workstations, a little bit different than game consoles, a little bit different business. They are $12 billion, so they're not nearly as big. And their sales is pretty steady, around 9% growth per quarter. You know, the last quarter, 16%, the quarter before that, 13%. So their sales have been very steady compared to Micron's, whose sales have been coming down. And because of that, NVD, it looks like, yeah, their stock is holding up much better. Okay, it's going to make $1.31, and it's a $22 stock. So we're talking about a 15 PE. So it's relatively more expensive, but then again, it's got better growth.
Okay. Great. Thanks for the information, Steve.
Take care. Hope it works for you. Whichever one you pick, or maybe a little of both. Who knows? You know, tech stocks are volatile. Just remember that. They are volatile. If we do get a correction, these will correct with the market. Don't think they will. They'll probably correct more than the market. But they also go up faster, too. That's why you can mix in a few of these, but you don't want to have a portfolio of these. It's easy to try our handy risk analysis tool. Just answer some straightforward questions. It takes about 3 minutes, and you'll be assigned a risk number. This will help you match up the risk in your present portfolio, because we can put that in our side of the system and compare the two, your risk number with your portfolio risk. Just look for the free and the risk analysis tool on InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley, 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, if your 401k plan does give you the option to invest in individual stocks, would it be wise to consider that? Mutual funds versus stocks, which is better for your 401k? That's our talking point for Thursday, April 30th, and we hope you'll be listening to that podcast.
888-992-4278. So whatever questions financially you have, give us a call. Warren Buffett has some rules. I don't know if I would call them rules, five rules. I would rather call them five reminders about investing in stocks, okay? And one of them is to understand that the stock is a business and not a piece of paper. It's a business. So think in terms of you're owning a business, not something, a piece of paper that goes up and down in value. It's a business, running a business, and the business makes money over long term, that kind of, or it doesn't make money, whatever. Number two, stocks serve as inflation protection over the long haul because stocks go up faster than inflation. Earnings for companies are higher than inflation. So you know, for the long haul, you will beat inflation. Now, that long haul is not in months, not in years. He's more talking decades. Volatility is not risk, because the stock price goes down, that's not risk. Stock price goes up, that's not risky either. Volatility is, in his definition, you know, the risk of the stock, it depends on the business it's running, and is that business sound or not sound over the long haul. Number two, that refers to what I said about multi-decade time horizon, and therein lies a problem for older people. How, if you need the money sooner, you can't be like Warren Buffett. Buffett doesn't need the money, and he has insurance companies that constantly supply him, the Berkshire Hathaway, with more money, so he keeps betting in the market, and he uses leverage because of that. So we all can't be Warren Buffett. And his fifth one is keep an eye on the costs of fees, of funds, mutual funds, managers, trading costs. Keep an eye on all that because that can eat into your eventual returns. All those are good. I don't say they're rules. I don't think they're rules, but they are good principles. How about that? We use the word principle. And that's Warren Buffett. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So what's your question for me? Same number all the time, 888-99-CHART.
Hello there. My name is Mamuka from Los Angeles, and I listen to your show or podcast every day. I do find it very educational. I am calling to ask for your opinion regarding two companies and their entry levels, if you think it is a good point for entry. First one is ticker symbol CNC, Charlie Nancy Charlie, and the second one is Twitter. Both of these companies had a significant gap down, and I was looking for gaining positions for short term, 6 months or less. I am wondering if this is a good idea and if you think they're pretty close to the bottom or not. I appreciate it, and I will be listening to your show this evening. Thank you very much.
So he's telling me he's a trader, not an investor, and he's looking for a short-term entry level. The first one, CNC, Charlie, Nancy, Charlie, is Centen Corporation. It's a medical management care company. It's a $7.5 billion company. Very good growth rate, sales growth, earnings growth. Those are good numbers. And the stock has taken off in the last year from $35 to about $73, $74. Today it's at $63.95. And that happened from $74 to $64. Happened in three days. So most likely, now he's looking for an entry point. Remember, that's what he's looking for. Most likely that fall, hopefully, is earnings. That it missed earnings or did something bad with earnings. So you, as a trader, not an investor, you're trying to pick an entry point. Make sure the news that came out that caused this to collapse in 3 days is short-term in nature. Because if it's long-term in nature, the stock is going to continue down. Now, you also, if you're a trader, you're going to wait till the stops falling. As a trader, you want to see it find support somewhere. And the next support looks like, to me, a little bit above 60, somewhere around $60, $60.50 in that area. And there's a lot more support in the low 50s. So you got to wait till the stops going down. Then you pick it up for the bounce, because it probably will bounce. If the earnings news was, short-term in nature, not something, you know, well, it had a bad quarter because of XYZ. Find out. Now, Twitter, of course, totally different company. But see, invest for everybody else, traders don't care what companies they own. They don't care about the business necessarily. They're looking for short-term gains is what they're doing. Now, Twitter also collapsed from $50 down to $38 in 2 days. Okay? And that's all about earnings. A lot of support, right around $35 to $36. That's where you'd probably want to pick it up. But you also, same thing. From a Twitter basis, it probably is a short-term problem. But you want to wait for it to at least stop falling before you enter it. So those are the areas I would consider buying, you know, for Twitter, $35, $36, somewhere in that range. A lot of support right there. Can a creditor garnish your Social Security benefits? Can a creditor garnish your Social Security benefits? That's coming up on our InvestTalk Personal, a feature that's going to be in the next half hour. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and I hope you can stay with me on InvestTalk. Chart. Let's talk to BJ in Fremont. How you doing, BJ?
I'm doing good. Thanks, Steve, for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a question about SEP IRA.
Sure.
I have a SEP IRA with about $10,000 in there.
Okay.
What are my options to roll it over into regular IRA without any penalty or tax consequences?
Okay, let me ask a question about the SEP IRA. Are you still contributing to it?
No, I'm not contributing to it anymore.
Okay, so now you can shut it down if you want, and you can roll the SEP IRA into a regular IRA. Then the SEP IRA would be gone. It's only if it's an active SEP IRA that you can't roll that into a regular IRA, okay? But it's not active anymore, okay. Meaning you're not investing money in it anymore, putting money in it anymore. You can roll it to a regular IRA.
I see. So,
okay.
So what is the basic difference between the two?
SEP IRA, you're able to put more money away in a SEP IRA, and it's usually for an individual business. SEP IRAs are for businesses, you know, a sole proprietorship, just you, basically. Okay? A regular IRA is you could be working for somebody, it's just an IRA, but you're limited to a $5,000 or $6,000 per year. In a SEP IRA, it's higher. You put more money away.
Okay, so at the end, when SEP IRA matures, is there any difference?
No, there's no.
Will it be treated withdrawal from a regular IRA?
Yeah, there's no difference. They don't really mature. That's probably not the right terminology. A SEP IRA is just like an IRA when it comes to withdrawal times when you're in retirement. You know, at a retirement age, it's the same rules apply. You're going to draw whatever you want, but it's going to be added to your adjusted gross income, whatever you withdraw, and you have to pay income tax on it. And by the time you reach 70 and a half, there will be required minimum distributions. They make you take money out of it, both a regular IRA and a SEP IRA. But you don't really want to keep two of them open if one, you know, if the SEP is not active, because wherever you're holding it, they're going to charge you like between $50 and $100 a year just to have it open. So
yeah, actually that's my concern because they are charging too much maintenance fee.
Yeah,
and I think I want to roll it into the regular IRA.
That makes perfect sense to me, and that's a perfectly good reason to do it. So I would do it. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, BJ.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Yeah, there's no reason you don't want to have a bunch of IRAs open that you don't need because the custodian, the company holding it, the bank, the mutual fund, whoever, the trading firm, whatever, whoever's holding it, charges you an annual fee to leave it there. So why have five of them when you have to then change five annual fees when you can just have one annual fee? Let's go to Ben in San Mateo. How you doing, Ben?
Good. For a 40-year-old who has a 20-year investing time horizon and wants to add some health care stock to his portfolio, what do you think about Johnson & Johnson stock for 20-year horizon?
I think you'll make...
Do you think that's a good addition?
Yep. I think you'll make money without any hesitation. You'll make money on it 20 years. We own Johnson & Johnson in our income portfolio. It pays a 3% dividend. We bought it, I don't know, 2-3 months ago. I'm not quite sure. And it's been about the same price that we bought it, right about where it is now, at $100. But its sales are very steady. It'll either grow a few percentage points or shrink a few percentage points. And the earnings are constantly go up year after year after year. It has for years and years and years and years, even during the recession. So it's very steady. Therefore, Ben, it's not very exciting. It's not. You know, you could go a year, 2 years, and the stock price doesn't move at all, but you'll get 3%. And then you'll probably get, the stock price will probably move up over long periods of time, 2-3% a year, and you get 3% dividend. So, you know, you'll make money at it. You just won't make exciting money, and it won't be, you know.
Well, if you had 20 years, what do you think about Gilead instead of Johnson & Johnson? I mean, it's not a big healthcare company, but I mean, maybe is that a stock that for a 40-year-old you might prefer over Johnson & Johnson given the volatility?
No, Gilead is in the same area, everybody. It's in the biomedical area, but Johnson & Johnson's more drug, toothpaste and shampoo. It's more of a consumer staple company, where Gilead is a strictly, you know, in the therapeutics area, and it's a lot higher growth, it's a lot higher risk, Gilead, than Johnson & Johnson. Now, is it good a company? Heck yeah, Gilead's a good company. There's nothing wrong with Gilead, but it's a whole different kind of mindset, Ben. Okay, Johnson.
Well, with a 20-year time horizon, which would you take if you
Johnson
were 20 years older?
Johnson and Johnson. Johnson & Johnson, because Gilead is you know, it's got drugs, and it's going to be some year over that period of time it could get crushed, and then it could be. There's all kinds of things. Johnson & Johnson, when you're talking about a huge consumer staple company, consumer staples get sold every year, no matter what the recession's like. Doesn't matter. Where Gilead, they'll have patent expirations, and they'll have, you know what I mean? It's a higher risk, you know?
Okay, thanks. Okay. That's what I wanted to hear. Okay, thank you.
Good luck. I hope it works for you. Thanks, Ben. That's Johnson & Johnson, J&J, and Gilead is G-I-L-D. Those are the symbols. It's time for InvestTalk Personal, the day-to-day personal finance decisions that impact your lives and my life, everybody's life. Can Social Security benefits be garnished by a creditor? The answer is mostly no. Not all no, but mostly no. It really depends on who's doing the garnishing. Now, do you know what garnishing works? It's pretty painful, but it's simple. A creditor, someone you owed money to, goes to court, gets a judgment against you, and your salary, your property, your whatever, can be garnished, meaning they can collect money, okay? But they can't collect Social Security benefits. They can't take federal benefits payments. That means Social Security, veterans benefits, railroad retirement, and Office of Personal Management retirement accounts, according to Section 20C of the Social Security Act, okay? But not, we got to wait a minute now. If you're still working, your creditor can garnish your wages, even if you are getting Social Security. Okay? Depending on the state you're living in, it allows assets to be garnished as well. Your house, your car, the silver. And if you owe the federal government back taxes, well, you're going to have to give up 15% of your Social Security benefits. If you owe alimony or child support, you're going to have to surrender 50 to 65% of your Social Security benefits. Okay, so that's where you can get hit. Taxman always plays pretty hardball, so you got to be careful. That's the best talk personal, everybody. If there's a topic you'd like me to discuss, well, check in with an email and ask me. Tell me what you want to know. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the contact Steve or contact Justin.
Life insurance is nothing more than a contract between the insured and the holder of the insurance policy. but it can sure get complicated. Understanding life insurance, one of Steve's info sheets that can clear things up for you. When you're an InvestTalk Insider, you have access to these information sheets and more. You can sign up now for free on InvestTalk.com.
Hey, we're going to go talk to Art, Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I just had a question about bonds versus, like, some what I consider, like, conservative dividend-paying stocks.
Okay.
You know, such as, like, your last caller just called about Johnson & Johnson.
Right.
I'd prefer to buy the dividend paying versus the bonds, because I'm not real familiar with bonds, and I'm figuring as long as the stocks are paying like you know, close to like 3% or so at this point, it would seem like you know, I would lean toward the stock versus the bonds.
Well, I can understand that, Art, but one thing you're leaving out is the difference in risk in those two types of assets. Stocks, even dividend paying stocks, is a whole lot riskier than bonds, especially if you're buying high quality bonds. Whole lot riskier. Stocks can go up and down in value sharply, and we saw that many times now. 2008 crash, even the high dividend blue chips will go down sharply. They did on me in 2008. Mm-hmm. Bonds don't go up and down with the stock market. They are pretty steady. They will move up and down in value based on interest rates, but they move very slowly, generally speaking, unless you're buying junk bonds, which I never recommend. Don't buy junk bonds. So, you know, your bonds, you're always going to get your yield, whatever it is, 3%, 5%, whatever it is, and then you get all your money back when the bond matures. And I agree with you, Art. They're much more difficult to buy than just go, oh, just go buy some bonds. It's harder than that. Well, you got to look at quality, yield to maturity, liquidity. You got to look at a lot of different things that most people aren't familiar with. So it does make it more difficult. But remember, bonds are a lot less risky. They don't go up and down with the market. Dividend-paying stocks do. Okay.
Yeah, I was just asking the question because I'm not real familiar with the types of bonds that you're talking about, and I feel like the more conservative stocks would be the dividend payers that are like fairly steady.
Well, they generally are over any long period of time. They certainly are, Art. But remember, 2008, they went down 40%, just like the market. Of course, they made it all up in 2009. But you didn't know that in 2008, right? You don't know that.
Right.
So they can be scary. Okay. Art, appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Let's go to Sonny in San Jose. He wants to talk about shorting the stock. How are you doing, Sonny?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, Steve. And thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
The question I have is, what could be the scenario, let's say, if you are short on a stock and it company sees the trading of that because both fees or SEC on a kind of.
So wait a minute, say that again. What would happen to a short if the company goes out of business? Is that what you're saying?
So let's say you had a short on a stock and all of a sudden that stock stops trading on exchange.
Okay.
What are the consequences?
Okay. And so for everybody else, Sonny, that's a good question. Shorting a stock means you think it's going to go down, okay? You borrow the stock, you sell it. Cut to the chase is you think it's going to go down. And when you short a stock, you borrow somebody else's stock and you sell it. And you have to buy it back at some point to give it back to the person. And hopefully, you're hoping to buy it back at a lot cheaper price, okay? Now, Sonny is saying, okay, I sell a stock short. And let's say it works and it goes down sharply. It goes down, and then it ceases to trade because the Nasdaq or the New York Stock Exchange froze it or got rid of it, told them they had to leave the exchange, because that does happen, Sonny. It does. So what can you do? Because now you can't buy it because it's no longer trading. Well, those shares still exist, Sonny, even though they're no longer trading. And I've never, ever, ever, whatever your trading house is, let's say you're with Scott Trade or Schwab or whatever, You got to call them up and say, I have a stock that can't be traded, and I want to buy to cover my short. And what they'll do is they'll go out and buy it for you, even though it's not on exchange. They'll buy it for you, maybe a penny, a share, or, you know, they'll get it for you so that you can cover your short. They'll do it for you. Okay? I've heard
so,
this.
Sometimes the SEC, you know, file investigation and they say, okay, we're gonna stop the trading or something like of that by nature, something like that. So it never trades again. So that means your broker will let you buy back for a cent.
Yeah. If the cease and desist trading the stock is a short term thing, the SEC did whatever, and it's short term, and it's going to come back. They will not let you do what I suggest. They meaning your custodian, because when it does come back and trade, it'll probably trade at pennies on the dollar, right? But you might have to wait 3 months, 6 months. But it's only if they like go out of business or there always is a way to cover your short, Sonny.
Okay.
There always is a way.
But it is in favor anyway, right? Because you want to, you know, buy back in the minimum possible price.
Of course.
Penny or whatever. But
the cheaper it is, the more money you're going to make, right? Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Thanks, Sonny. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, we had GDP numbers out for the first quarter. It came out this morning, and it was 0.2% growth. 0.2%. Most experts were expecting 1% or a little bit more. And that was a reduction of earlier in the quarter, thinking 2.5%. Okay, there was three main reasons, or three strong reasons why this happened. One was weather. The weather was really bad, remember? And I think it probably impacted by about 1%. Another was the dollar getting stronger. Another percent, maybe. And the third thing was a collapse in oil prices, maybe 0.5% off our GDP. Those three things are what caused it. Kind of interesting. And those three things are very visible, right? They were very visible. You could see it. And everybody knew about these things. It's just that they didn't know how bad or how much they would affect. Well, affected pretty good, didn't it? We're coming up on the last segment of the program, so let's try to get your question in. Call us now at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. Remember, there's a straight link to Steve or Justin if you have a question or comment meant for only them. Just click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
888-992-4278. Why is oil rallying? Oil has fallen 46% since 2014 to the March low. That was just last month, the March low, where it went down to $45 a barrel. From that March low, it has climbed steadily up. It's now at $58.70 today. Okay, so in a month, it's gone up from $45 to $59. That's a pretty good jump in price. Why? Especially when supplies are at record highs. Supplies are record highs. Rig counts are continuing to fall, and their rig, meaning drilling for new oil, is continuing to fall, and they're at a 20-week low. So what you're seeing here is investors looking forward and saying, hey, the rig count's going down, so they got the supply, even though it's still going up, and we're still having record highs, rig counts are going down, therefore, sometime down in the future, the oil prices are going to go down. I mean, oil supplies are going to go down. And so it's the increase in supply is slowing. And in fact, at the Cushing, Oklahoma last week, the storage of in Cushing, Oklahoma of oil, that's one of the major deposits of oil in our country, supply fell 500,000 barrels. So we're starting to see a supply glut that may be worked off in the future. Remember, stock markets always look forward. Remember we had a conference on this the end of last year. end of last year, oil prices, you know, I think our last one was it November of last year, and we talked about oil prices and the opportunities there as we saw oil falling. Eventually, there's going to be an opportunity. And it looks like the opportunity is here. Doesn't mean that oil is going to continue to go up. I have a feeling it will slowly continue to go up. Doesn't mean it have to. I can see it falling back down and then going back up again. But, you know, that's what you really want to pay attention to is the future, not what's happening today. We still have a big supply glut today. But if rig counts are going down and they've been falling 20 weeks in a row, eventually supply glut will get eaten up at some point. Now let's get back to our listener line, 888-99-CHART. Here's a question we can want to get done before the end of the show.
Hey, Justin and Steve. I love the show. I'm from the Cleveland, Ohio area, and I listen through a podcast on Spotify. I had a question about comparing two energy ETFs. One is RYE, the Guggenheim Weighted Energy, and the XLE Spider. I'm wondering which one of those would be the better choice. They look very similar. Other concern I have is I'm through Schwab. I can get RYE commission-free. Otherwise, I'd have to pay $9 for XLE. I was wondering if that should be a factor in my decision or not. I look forward to hearing you on the show. Thank you. Bye.
Well, as far as a fee, it should never be a factor unless your account is really, really, really small and that $9 is, you know, a hefty percentage. But it really shouldn't be a factor in your decision. RYE is the Guggenheim S&P Equal Weighted Energy Sector. It's tracking the S&P Equal Weight Index Energy Sector. The other one is just the energy sector, tracking the energy sector. Okay? What's the difference? Equal weight means they're putting equal weight for every stock in that in an energy sector. In other words, ExxonMobil is worth no more or less than ABC Tiny Oil Company in the energy index. Equal weight. Whereas a normal index, bigger the company is, the more weight is put on that. So when they go up and down, it pushes that index up and down more so when the big boys go up and down. Whereas equal weight, everybody has the same amount of influence on the index. So which one's better? I don't know. You know, I can't tell you one's better than the other. If I was going to buy it, I might go with the non-commission RYE. Why pay a commission? Kind of like that. Before we close for the hour, a reminder that you can see our investment programs on investtalk.com. We simplify your choices. Take a look at your selected growth in. Select growth and income program, growth and income, or just a growth program. We have a number of programs, four or five of them, depending on what kind of investor you are. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the investment tab. I'm portfolio manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we'll hope you join us again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.